The views and discussion expressed on this program do not necessarily represent those of the hosts of the program, WMKV, Maple Knoll Communities, WLHS, the Lakota Local School District, or staff and management. The information and advice presented are educational in nature and not intended to be taken as specific legal, accounting, or other professional advice. Always consult with your own legal, accounting, or other professional before making any investment. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing, a show to help you gain financial freedom by investing in real estate. Brought to you by the Real Estate Investors Association of Cincinnati and the Ohio Real Estate Investors Association. You're listening to Real Life Real Estate Investing on WMKV, WLHS, and the Maple Knoll Radio Network. And now your host, Vina Jones Cox.
Good afternoon, everybody. Welcome to Real Life Real Estate Investing. I am your guest host, Tiffany Ray, sitting in for the goddess herself, Vina Jones Cox. And today we are in for a treat with Kathy Russell, who's going to be talking to us about a topic subject to maybe back in my real estate heyday when I first started, it might have been thought of as an assignment, but we're going to talk about that. And I do want to remind you guys that this show is live, so you are able to give us a call. The number to dial is 1-877-772-9658. And if you are very busy and just have time to send us a quick email, you can submit those to Vena Radio. That's VENA Radio@gmail.com. So, Kathy, are you there with us? Are you on the line?
Yes, Tiffany, I'm here. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Hey, Miss Kathy. Nice to finally meet you over the phone. I know we've exchanged some emails and whatnot, but I'm excited to talk about this strategy that most people probably don't even know how safely to do, right? A subject to deal. And no matter what they've heard on YouTube, TikTok, and those places, or all the money that they may have paid for some of those courses out here, I think today you're going to give us a teaser and share with us a little bit about it. So why don't we just jump right in? Kathy, can you give me a little bit about your background in doing subject to deals, and why have you seen so many over the years?
Absolutely. I myself have been an investor for, I don't really like to think about this number, but about 35 years. Things seem pretty old. But it also, in before I retired, I was a closing attorney, and I practiced in the state of North Carolina, where I still live today. And my real estate practice, I was probably one of two or maybe three in the state of North Carolina, was kind of the go-to attorney for all things creative and all things investors. And one of the, you know, things I did for many, many years and did quite a lot of was these subject to transactions. And so I've seen so many, because I've done hundreds, probably thousands, for clients, and, you know, have seen all the changes through the years. So I've done quite a few on behalf of others.
Exactly. So generally speaking, what is your opinion of them? Do you think they're good for sellers, buyers, and maybe what kind of sellers or buyers would you say that that this particular strategy would be good for, or that you may see enter into this path to rid themselves of their real estate or some of their troubles?
Well, I would say my general opinion of them, and, you know, be aware that the answer to almost any question from a good attorney is almost always, it depends.
It depends. So, yes, the real estate.
You'll hear that a lot from me.
Yes.
So my general opinion of them depends. And one of the things that it depends upon is that the fact that laws and regulations change so much. And of course, I can't answer for every state, and but, you know, I know, for example, at one point in the state of North Carolina, it wasn't considered really prudent to do them, but that changed. And so in a way, my opinion depends. It changes with the times. As of right now, in at least my state, it is, they are very safe to do. There was a period of time, it was about 22 years ago, when they were really on a witch hunt for anyone doing subject to, and mm-hmm. they didn't care if you were doing right, doing wrong. They mm-hmm. just, they were after you. And that's just not, no matter how well you do them or how prudent and straight up and honest you are. If your regulatory body and your home state government is actively against you, it's not smart to do them, because, you know, even if you have done nothing wrong and even if you have immensely helped people, if they don't like you, and even if you win, the cost of going up against the government is just, you know, it's never, almost never worth it. But anyway, as of right now, they are, it's perfectly fine and it's perfectly safe to do them if you do them right.
Right. And so you say safe and you say right and wrong. And so that makes me think that even in the minds of some of the regulatory agencies, you know, whether that be local or federal, that they're thinking that people are doing something wrong. So in your opinion, how do most investors do them? Like, what are they doing wrong or what are they doing right that may make them think, or that may make regulators think that this is not a good strategy?
Yeah, good question. I don't feel that, at least in certain states, that regulators are really looking for them right now like they used to. I have not personally seen that. Mm-hmm. However, my opinion is that if people continue to do them wrong, that will, you know, it's all cyclical. If the witch hunts always start because one person or one prominent person, mm-hmm, or a few people have done them egregiously wrong, and then once that gets discovered, it sort of everyone gets lumped into the same boat, and that's when the regulators do start looking at them. I don't always know specifically how people are doing them, but I can tell you that, you know, with the proliferation of technology and online platforms, like you mentioned earlier, mm-hmm, YouTube, Facebook, you know, you get your gurus and you know, the RIAs, is it easier to join your RIA and go, you know, to a live meeting a couple weeks a month, or is it easier to sit in bed and learn from, you know, someone with a 10,000, 100,000 followers on Facebook and it's free? Well, you know, I say beware of that, because oftentimes you get what you pay for. If you go to a good RIA or a good local real estate investors group, the people there are by and large there to help you. They're all there to help one another. They're all there to learn from one another. And what they get if you succeed is that you become, you know, an experienced investor, and you contribute and give back and help the new investors. Well, I think, you know, people should ask themselves what the online gurus or groups or whatever you want to call them, what do they have to gain? Most usually, a lot of what they have is free, and then they'll have something to sell. Their ability to help you, as opposed to your local real estate investor group in your home market, when these guys have, you know, followers from all over the planet, they can't possibly have the local knowledge that your fellow investors in your local groups will have. So the best they can do is give you some general advice, and there's certainly some value in sometimes they, you know, have strategies for how to find them and stuff like that. But where I feel you need to beware is they're very short on the technical specifications and requirements to do them properly and legally, which of course aren't the same from state to state. So, I joined all these groups many, many years ago because I like to keep an eye on them. And the other thing about subject two is, you know, they don't go wrong until they go wrong.
Exactly.
Yeah, so you could do one and never know there's a problem with it because there's nothing to reveal it. But what I have seen here recently, now that these groups have some age on them, is I've seen in the posts, I did this subject to deal and here's how I did it, and oh my gosh, now, you know, fill in the blank. The seller's coming after me. The mortgage, mm-hmm, company's coming after me. The seller wants their property back. I'm seeing them more and more. In fact, I've seen recently there are now groups around that who have sprung up, which, you know, any good problem begs for a solution. And there are now sort of, this is not what they call themselves, but subject to rescue groups out there. So maybe they're lawyers or paralegals and or individuals who claim to be able to come in and remediate or fix up your deal that's gone south.
And then you see that a lot, not to interrupt, but that rescue group things that rings with me. And you couldn't have said it better than, hey, buyer beware. And it's all good until it's not. And so there were some gems that you really dropped right there. And Mike here at my radio station is telling me that we need to take a quick break. So stay with me, Kathy. Stay with me, everybody out there. We'll be right back with more Real Live Real Estate Investing. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome back. This is Tiffany Ray, and I am your guest host at Real Live Real Estate Investing. And today we're talking with Kathy Russell about the subject of subject twos. Again, I'd like to remind you, give us a buzz if you have any questions about this topic, 877-772-9658. We're also taking those emails at vinaradio@gmail.com. For all of you guys out there that are local, I'd like to extend to you an offer. We've got Tech and Tools Focus Group. That's right. It's this evening. And basically, it just shares all the techs, apps, systems that everybody in the real estate world can't live without. And it's free. It's open to the public. You can get more information about that at CincinnatiRIA.com. And then tomorrow, we have our free annual picnic. This is a picnic with a purpose, and it is also free and open to the public, but we do need your registration by this evening, midnight. I think that's the cutoff, if I'm not mistaken. It's going to be at the Blue Ash Recreation Center Shelter. And again, you can get more information about that at Cincinnati REIA. That's Cincinnati, REIA.com. And before we broke, Kathy and I were talking about rescue groups or maybe ambulance chasers. I think that might have been another another name for it. So Kathy, we were talking about the good, bad, and the ugly and how some of these things can go sideways. Maybe can you walk us through a quick example of how a subject two deal could go badly wrong? Like who gets hurt and how might it affect them?
Yeah, there are so many ways. Again, it depends, and I would submit that if you do all the paperwork properly, then you certainly mitigate anything that can go wrong. Mm-hmm. And one thing I've always told people is that whenever you are doing a subject to transaction, so whenever any situation in which you are buying a property in which the title will transfer to some entity with the mortgage remaining in the name of the original mortgage holder, the original what would be your seller. I would never tell anyone with 100% that you are watertight, nothing's going to go wrong. What we do in teaching people to set it up and do the correct paperwork is to make those things as foolproof as possible. So we're going to, you know, take your chances of what can go wrong down to as close to zero as we can get it. And that is achieved by just following the guidelines and the correct paperwork and knowing how to title it and knowing the verbiage to put in your documents. And if you do all those things, you really do make yourself as bulletproof as possible. I recently had a transaction that I had closed before I retired. And one thing we always tell the people, and this was the end buyer who was in the house, is to, you know, anytime you hear from the mortgage company, you immediately call the trustee, and I'm still the trustee. So she didn't do that, and the bank, the mortgage company, somehow became aware or was under the impression that the property had been transferred from the original owner who still held the mortgage in his name. And so they called the loan due, and in fact, they had filed foreclosure and even had a hearing date, and this was in North Carolina, of course. And by the time she decided to call me, My worry was that she had done some damage by speaking with the bank.
Mm-hmm.
But it was, so she, from panic mode to like, I'm getting foreclosed on, I'm going to lose this property. What do I do? Took me literally, I wrote one email to the bank and attached it one document, and the same day they had dismissed the lawsuit.
Wow.
So the power there just goes to show you the power of doing it right and knowing what you're doing and following the correct paperwork. It makes, you know, again, I'm never going to say 100% bulletproof, but certainly that's a great example that one word from the trustee and one copy of the relevant document, and the bank said, oops, our error, and the foreclosure was dismissed.
Wow. And so what you're saying here is, I hear a resounding theme, and we're talking about doing it the right way and making sure that your paperwork is definitely ironclad. I hear a lot of people talk about the risk and that due on sale clause. That theme really rings a lot on different creative strategies. And so I think that's something that you have to concern yourself with the paperwork itself and that and the, you know, the buyer's commitment. That's another thing. I don't know whether you find that as a significant risk or not, but it's like on down the road, if the buyer is great and you've even had a conversation around the policy, around the paperwork and what it is that you're doing and why you're doing it. But what happens, say, if the investor dies or if they file bankruptcy, one of my favorite things, bankruptcy, you know, what mm-hmm. happens to the house? Like what happens to the seller and the person who's actually in the subject too?
Yeah, great question. And the answer is, once again,
it depends.
if you have made the graven mistake of having that property titled in your name, or let's say I did the deal and I titled my name and I passed away, well, I've created a huge mess because mm-hmm. your seller now has no mechanism to get their house back. If I die. And the property's in my name. Well, that's going through my estate,
mm-hmm.
and you're talking a lawsuit, which is incredibly expensive and time-consuming endeavor. However, again, if you have done that paperwork correctly, anyone in the chain who passes away or is no longer available, even the trustee, because if you have it in a trust and you have a trustee, you're fine. It doesn't matter what happens to the original seller, what happens to the investor. It even has provisions for if something happens to the trustee, you know, there are provisions for a successor trustee. So if you, again, do all the paperwork correct and you've contemplated all the things that can go wrong, because like we mentioned before, you might do 100 of these and none of them go wrong. Nothing happens. And so oftentimes all the rigmarole that we go through and all the paperwork and all the formalities, it can seem quite excessive. You know, why do I really need to do all this? Well, you know what? No. In 99 cases, maybe no. But if only one of your 100 something happens, it goes south, boy, it's going to be worth every penny, every paper you sign and every T you cross and every I you dotted to do it right. Because it only takes one. And I always tell people, yeah, if you never need this stuff, you never need it. But what if you do?
And so the risks continue to mount up. But I'm hearing you say that if you pad yourself with good paperwork and the correct knowledge and how to do the program or the strategy, then you know it really can be a very powerful tool in your arsenal of transactioneering as it relates to real estate investing. But I'm still hearing something about this pattern of risk, like. We've talked about due on sale, being called by bank, chain of title. What about the investor, like not understanding what their personal liability is in a subject to transaction?
Yeah, and I think that happens a lot. Or
mm-hmm.
An investor thinks, well, I've made disclosures and I've done everything I can do, and they feel like maybe that absolves them from liability, but. The fact is, once again, if you as an investor or an end buyer, whichever, have put that property in your name personally, and if anything happens, and, you know, as we've talked about, a number of things could go wrong, even if, like you said, if everyone's doing things right and everyone has the best of intentions, things can still go wrong. And no matter how good your intentions were, if you have put that thing in your name, you're going to be personally liable. It's going to look like you stole something from the seller, because they don't have any recourse. But if you set it up correctly with a mechanism in place to where if something happens, and that something, you know, I feel like we use that word a lot, well, fill in the blank. What is something? Well, someone stops making a payment, or someone gets hit by a car and can't make a payment, any number of things. Someone files bankruptcy. If you have structured it correctly and all your documents anticipate for all those things and cover them, well, you won't have personal liability. There will be no need for it. You'll be covered and everything will be smooth. But if you haven't done it correctly, you definitely stand to have some personal liability, no matter how much you think you've disclosed.
I get that. And so there's still a resounding theme. Very good strategy, very profitable, and definitely something that will help the sellers out. But let's talk power dynamics, okay? So what happens when you, me as the person that is actually offering the subject to as a strategy, and I'm talking to the seller and they think it's a good thing and they've signed with me, but then all of a sudden they really don't understand all the things that they signed?
Well, that is a fantastic question. And I would add, not only they don't understand what they signed, all of a sudden, quote unquote, they don't understand what they signed, because I've seen that happen as well, where they may have understood it perfectly well, but, and they were so happy because they were in trouble and they were about to lose everything, and they could not have been happier with what these investors were helping them with, this subject to transaction. But, you know, a couple years down the road, and they got jobs again and everything's rosy, they all of a sudden didn't understand. So that is a super important question. And the best money you will ever spend as an investor is to pay for a closing. And whether your state as a closing attorney state or a title company state, the one thing that used to be very vogue with subject to transactions is what they call, you know, kitchen table closing.
Yes.
So, yeah, you just sit at the buyer or seller's kitchen table and you tell them the documents and you sign. And that is maybe the number one no-no, or if not, certainly close to it. Because let's say, you know, I don't know, closings are different costs in different states. So let's say in a subject to closing is always going to be a little more expensive than just a closing, but let's say an average of $1,000, I think is probably a good average across states, $1,000 or $1,100 to spend to have this transaction take place in the office of a professional. For one thing, it removes a huge layer of liability from you as the investor, because now there's an attorney or a title agent who's stepping in to take that liability for you, number one. Number two, they are going to explain it by a third party. You having a financial interest in the transaction is not considered, you know, it's kind of a chicken carne man house sort of thing. Well, and the attorney generals like to say things like, well, you had an interest, you didn't explain it to them right. Well, you know what? That allegation completely goes away if you have closed in the office of a professional who explain everything, take the liability, answer questions, and then thirdly, I think that it, even as a psychological matter, the seller feels much more reluctant to make some wild claim to an attorney general's office to say, they didn't explain to me, I don't understand, if that has been done by a professional like a title company or an attorney. It's much easier to say that about you as the investor. So spend the money, have your professionals handle your professional matters for you. Do not do a kitchen table closing, and you will just have removed the probably, you know, the biggest amount of liability you can remove.
And Kathy, that right there, and audience and listeners out there, is what I would call a pro tip. And on that note, stay tuned. We're going to be right back after this break. Welcome back, everybody. This is Tiffany, your co-host, or your host today for Real Live Real Estate Investing. And I was going to say my co-partner in crime here today is Kathy Russell. And when we left, she had just given the wonderful pro tip of, hey, guys, spend the money. I know it's the cost of doing business, but no kitchen table closings. Go to an attorney or a title company. And I love that. And this conversation has gone very quickly, but it's definitely been dynamic on a very creative strategy that I think is going to be in the forefront of real estate arsenals, things in your arsenal that we're going to use here in the next coming and upcoming years, to be honest with you. And if you liked what you're hearing so far, Kathy is going to be doing a masterclass. That class is about 2 weeks away, I believe, on July the 12th at 9 a.m. sharp. It's going to be how to do subject twos right. And that class is just $47 for members, $97 for non-members. And that is the early bird pricing through July the 10th. And so I for sure am registered for that class, Kathy. And because, like I said, I think this is going to be a golden giver in the real estate arsenal, because I think there are a lot of things out there that is happening in the environment, and this strategy might be just a great way to help people out of some of their problems. But I do want to go backwards in time for a minute, because what I remember hearing a lot about with subject twos is flipping. Like, I'm going to get this subject two and I'm going to flip it to this person. So over the last 5 to 6 years, you're hearing a lot about flipping, and it's a conversation about, like, what happens with that liability change when an investor flips a subject to another person, whether they know it or not. So why all of a sudden is this a thing, and what is the buyer beware or risk level there, or just your thoughts in general?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Before I answer that, to go back to what you just said, I think you're 100% correct. Again, a lot of things in real estate are cyclical. In, you know, from 2010 to 2013 or 14, just about every other closing that we did was, you know, either involved a foreclosure or a short sale or something like that, just because of the state of the market. You know, after the sort of the crash of 08, mm-hmm. and for the last you know, number of years, 10 years, we haven't seen much of those. The short, you know, there used to be a whole education and strategy for doing short sales. That's gone. But that's coming back. And just like you said, subject to why? Because, you know, there's a lot of programs out there that are just now expiring from COVID relief from debt payments. And number one, and number two, all those few years when the interest rates were super low, you know, some of those people are going to be in trouble. So the beauty of subject two is to capture those low interest rates. You know, would you rather go take over payments for a property at 3% interest right now, or go out there and buy one at 7.35% exactly. interest? You know, so you're 100% correct. They are going to be coming back again. Mm-hmm. And also, that reminds me of something you said real early when we first started. It's a tool in your arsenal, and that's correct. And one of the things, and we'll go over this more Saturday, but you don't learn subject two to say, well, I'm going to go out there and do every deal as a subject two. No, that's not how that works. Subject two deals, you know, you have to recognize when a deal is good for subject two or not, and that is exactly what you said, Tiffany. It's a tool that you have. And as an investor, you want to educate yourself on all the different tools so that when an opportunity presents itself, you are able to say, ding, 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 3% interest rate, a landlord who's out of state and someone trashed his house, he can't afford to or doesn't want to fix it up, I think that'd be a good subject
too. Perfect storm.
So,
yeah.
Part of the education is learning what to look for that makes you say that would be a good subject to deal. So you hit the nail on the head there. And as to your question about flipping subject twos, it's a tricky subject. With the correct paperwork, if I want to be an investor, and you correct me if I'm not answering exactly what you're asking,
okay,
because I don't like refer to it as flipping, but I think this is what
you mean. Well, let me draw a differentiator there,
okay,
because I'm not necessarily talking about assigning the subject to contract to another investor. I really mean flipping. I mean, so if you want to break it down between assigning versus flipping, you can do that. So when I think about flipping, I really mean I'm the person. I'm not assigning it. I'm just flipping it to another person, just like you would flip that house or asset. Does that make more sense?
So
yeah?
If I'm the investor, I go in, I get a subject to, and then I just have someone else take over it? Is that?
Yeah. Same paperwork,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Not even an assignment of contracts, because I think of assignment of contracts more like a wholesale, like you're
so it, so it's versus, same paperwork. So it ne- my name
correct
never goes on.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. I have had clients do those, and again, I am aware of differing opinions on this out there, and there's a good reason for that, because the way a lot of people do them, that is very risky. But again, if you have got your paperwork straight, and the most important thing here in any subject to transaction is making sure all parties are protected. So if your paperwork is structured so that your seller always has recourse, then you can do it that way with the understanding, and again, you really have to make sure the seller understands this, because here's their recourse. If the worst thing that happens goes and it completely goes wrong and you are the investor, you're long gone, because I got my money and
yep,
I'm gone. And so now you're just dealing with Joe Buyer, who's probably not even an investor, probably just someone who saw an opportunity to buy a property,
mm-hmm,
which means, you know, they may have had some problems of their own in the past, making them higher risk. But if the paperwork has anticipated that, and your seller is protected, and the worst thing happens, and let's say the worst thing is your end buyer just can't or won't make payments anymore, and maybe they've trashed the property, the recourse, in one way, your seller is fully protected, but that protection is limited, and here's the rub. The way they're protected is they can immediately get the property back. No foreclosure, no eviction,
mm-hmm,
just a trustee just has to sign a document. So that sounds very easy, and we do explain that in closing. Well, you're protected in that something goes wrong, the property's yours. It'll be yours tomorrow. But the rub is, first of all, most sellers who have undertaken to do a subject to transaction, they don't want the property
That's
back.
Right.
They don't ever want to hear that property again, 9 times out of 10. So you know, you have to make sure they understand that, yes, you are protected, but this is what your protection is. So your protection may be limited, because
mm-hmm,
if you get that property back, no, you don't have to evict and you don't have to foreclose, but a couple things could happen. If there's an end buyer in there who's trashed it, now that's your problem. If the end buyer had a tenant in there, that's your problem.
Mm-hmm.
So again, there is protection in that they can regain ownership of the property for whatever that's worth.
Yeah, and sometimes, I mean, that might make them rest a little better in making a decision to go forward with this strategy. And it goes a step to say, hey, I've done everything within my power to make sure that, like you said, you are protected. And so, I mean,
yeah,
that would make me feel better about it if I didn't know enough about what it was that I'm doing. And then, I mean, you know, you could always tell them to seek their own legal counsel. Now, I know that's tricky, you know, because everybody might not understand the deal or what's going on. But if there's an attorney quite like yourself, or a real estate attorney, they're going to understand mm-hmm, the ins and outs and do's and don'ts of the transaction.
Well, yeah, maybe and maybe not. My experience with real estate attorneys is that they do closings,
mm-hmm,
and if they aren't versed in creative deals, they might not get it. But I will tell you this, I think absolutely, as you said, that any seller should always have the option to have their attorney look at it. And I haven't had this happen when I was practicing a whole lot, but the times that it did, no, the attorney had no clue what it was about. Mm-hmm. They didn't understand it at all. But if they got on the phone with me and I walked them through the documents and made them understand, they did get it. They'll understand, and they became comfortable with it. And again, you can't assure the seller 100%. You can get the property back, no problem. But you also have to make sure that the seller understands that in getting the property back, you know, that could come with its own problems. Mm-hmm. And quite frankly, most sellers in that situation are low on options. And that's not always the case. I have clients who would purposely buy properties and sell them subject to, then they weren't in any kind of trouble. They like to do it for whatever their own reasons were, be it tax, I don't know. But, you know, so it's not always the case of a distressed seller. But in those cases, they're purposely doing it that way. So, you know, making the seller feel comfortable isn't an issue because they want to do it. So in those other cases, when you likely have a seller who is in distress and is in either foreclosure or maybe just they've moved away and they're tired of being a landlord, tired of having their property trashed, for whatever reason, they're under some sort of self-imposed duress or stress or some situation that make them want to do this. Because let's face it, if I have a property on a golf course that's in top condition, I'm not going to sell it subject to. Why would I? I'm going to get the cash. So there's some reason that these sellers are willing to do this. And when those sellers are in those situations, they are generally low on options, and they inquire. You'd be surprised at how little they inquire about their own future protection. You know, I always feel it's incumbent at the closing to tell them. Some of them will come in there and they just want to sign everything and they don't care. That's another benefit of having the professional closing. They will make sure they hear what they need to hear, regardless if they want to or not.
Exactly. And stay tuned, everybody. We're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. This is Tiffany, your co-host, and you're co-hosting with Kathy Russell. And we're talking about subject twos. And before we left, she had dropped a bunch of gems on us. We're talking about closings, and we're talking about the padded paperwork, and we're talking about seller recourse, and all of that and more is going to be discussed in the masterclass. That class is upcoming on July the 12th, 9 a.m. sharp, with us at RIA. That is CincinnatiRIA.com. You can find more information about it. That class is on early bird special right now, $47 for members, $97 for non-members, and that's how to do subject to right. So, Kathy, a thought for you and a question. Like, we've talked about several scenarios and why this is going to be a prudent strategy for real estate investors in the time to come, but are there any deals or situations that make you say, no, this is not a subject to deal. It's a little bit too risky here. Like, just a dead, flat out no.
Yeah, there are probably a couple of situations. One of those would be a reverse mortgage. Mm. I would never want to do a subject to on a reverse mortgage. There are certain estates are a little tricky. If something's still tied up in an estate, it is probably not a good candidate for a subject to. Potentially could be at certain stages of the estate, but if the estate is in probate, that is probably not going to be a good strategy. And obviously one of the benefits of subject two is getting a good interest rate, such that, you know. And as a little strategy tip here, you can actually pay more as an investor than you normally would pay for a property. You know, every investor has their little formulas of mm-hmm. How they buy. You could actually pay more than your normal formula would permit with a subject to, because you really look at the payment. You know, can I cash flow the payment? And right. and that's all you have to care about. So it is a way to pay, you know, above what you would normally pay or above market value. I sort of got off track there.
I think it was right. You just did the converse of it. And we're talking about cost of funds over time. And so that was just another way to look at it.
Yeah,
so I don't think it's off track at all. You just went from one thing to another.
Yeah.
I definitely, you talked about reverse mortgages. That did not even enter into, you don't hear a lot about, I mean, you hear some about it, but you don't hear a lot about it like when it became very popular.
Right.
So, I would not have thought about that one at all, but it totally 100% makes sense to me. And so
yeah.
I know you've got this master class coming up, but I just a question. And is there one thing that you could make every new investor understand before they do a deal, a subject to deal? What would that one thing be?
The one thing is, I think, just the golden rule, and that is protect everyone. Protect your seller. You know, and that to me is real estate in general, real estate investing in general. And one of the things I have always loved about real estate investing is you can make a living
mm-hmm.
and while doing good. And you're always going to have your unethical people out there. Don't be one of them, man. I'm telling you, there's enough room in real estate deals, whether it's subject to or any other deal, that you can do right by people, that you can let your seller make enough money. A lot of times in subject to's, you know, sellers are just walking away. They're not making any money. But every once in a while, you'll stumble on a deal where they have a ton of equity and they still want out. Well, you know, don't take advantage. Make sure to treat everyone fairly. Make sure your seller is protected. So if everything you can think of does go wrong, and I've had, you know, some things come up over the years that are unanticipated, and then, you know, I revised my documents after that, and I like to kind of think there's nothing else out there, but Lord, who knows. But if you have protected everyone in the best way that you can and the best way that you know how, that would be my number one thing. It's treating everyone fairly and protecting everyone.
Yeah, and that fair and equitable thing, that is huge. And I think, we always say that it needs to be a win-win for all parties involved. And
exactly. Mm-hmm. And if the only way you can make money out there as a real estate investor is by, you know, ripping someone else mm-hmm. off or doing someone unfairly, then don't do it. That's just, it's there's enough deals out there that everyone can win, and that should be first and foremost of any real estate investor.
And I agree. And I made a comment at the very beginning of our conversation about, you know, no matter what people have heard on YouTube, TikTok, or the money that they've paid for those crash courses, and that's what I'm going to call them, crash for a reason. But you came back with the, hey, getting one of your local or national real estate investor association chapters. And I really do love being with an organization like that that does real estate and shows you how to ethically do real estate the right way. So in the last minute that we have here, Kathy, I know you're going to be with us in community with this masterclass on the 12th. Is there one tidbit or something that you want to leave us with about what to expect in that class, or maybe why somebody should come to that class, other than all the great stuff you've already told us? I mean, I have a page of notes here. I'm a note taker, right? I ready my pen every time I'm talking to somebody, especially an attorney, right? It's like, ooh, free nuggets. But so I have my own page of stuff already. But is there anything else that you would like to leave us with in this last minute or so?
Yes, ma'am. As you can see, we covered a lot in an hour, but
Lord,
it seems like we just started, right?
Yep.
It went so fast. So on Saturday, you're going to have, you know, 6 or whatever hours. So we will go over on the masterclass on July 12th, ways to look for them, how to find them, how to do them right. And then, you know, towards the end, we are going to go over all this, you know, mysterious paperwork that I've referred to, and how trust in a lot of people have closed in trust and then simply make the seller the beneficiary, and then do an assignment of that beneficial interest to themselves or their end buyer. We do not do it that way. That, in my opinion, it is just as bad. So you'll learn those little tips and tricks. And even I have, you know, attorneys or title companies in every state who can close for you, and that's another benefit of you'll be able to get on that list if you so desire, if you think it's something you'd like to do.
Exactly. And so, everybody, thank you, Kathy, very much for being with me today. I'm excited to be in community with you on the 12th. All the audience out there, take care. Happy investing. And until next week, see you soon.